The Leah Heilpan Show. BitMEX, the OG crypto derivatives platform and the best place to buy your Bitcoin.
Things really are just starting to heat up.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Leah Heilpan Show. Today, we have a lot of hot topics that we are bringing you. But before I bring my guests on, I do want to let you know that this podcast is sponsored by BitMEX. BitMEX is the OG crypto derivatives exchange that has now launched a spot exchange for you to easily buy and sell all your different crypto assets. Especially in a bear market, you need a name that you can trust. BitMEX sets the standard for reliability, performance, and transparency, and has, of course, proven this through multiple cycles and has really stood the test of time. So right now, BitMEX is celebrating the start of its spot exchange with $1 million in USD prizes to give away. To enter, all you need to do is trade the equivalent of $250. So you could pick up some Bitcoin during the dip. You can even enter up to 25 times and one lucky winner will win $500,000 in Bitcoin. So to enter and start buying Bitcoin and start your crypto journey, I'm going to leave all of the links in the description for you below so you can sign up and enter and start joining BitMEX today. Also on this podcast, as you know, we're having the conversations that you're sort of not allowed to have and nobody else is having. So a massive thank you to BitMEX, because without them, we wouldn't be able to bring you such valuable content. All right, guys, it's time to do this. Joining me on the show today is Adam Sosnick, the host of the Soscast podcast and the co-host of the very, very majorly famous and successful YouTube channel, Valuetainment. Adam, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you. You nailed that intro, Leah. Great job there, right?
I feel like it's a bit of a mouthful, but we got there at the end.
Yeah. Sometimes when your brain works so fast, you know, the words don't come out. I stumble my words all the time because my brain works so freaking fast, but you crushed it.
I like that. So for those that don't know who you are, because obviously I come from more of the crypto world, you're a super interesting guy. Please just explain briefly your background and what you do at Valuetainment.
Sure. Well, I'm born and raised in Miami. I'm a former jack of all trades, Miami party boy comedian who in his early 20s just didn't know what the hell was going on. And then I started seeing all my friends make tons and tons of money. This is around 2006, 2007, right before the financial crash. In Miami in real estate. And I was like, all right, I gotta get involved something. Like, I can't just be the guy on people's couch anymore. So I transitioned into finance. I got a job as a cold caller for a financial firm, hedge fund. And I crushed it in that business. I'm a financial executive at VP of sales at the same financial firm I started in 06. And from there, I transitioned into being a host and co-host with Valuetainment. I've done business with Patrick Bet-David. Shout out to Patrick. For 10 years before he recruited me to Valuetainment. But really what like I owe my success to is that I'm a master networker. Mm-hmm. So I'm just constantly networking. I'm just in the right places, right times, talking to the right people. And this is something that I'm dealing with Patrick on, is that like, yeah, I made it in money. I made it in finance. I've made it in podcasting, Valuetainment. Great, great, great. What do I owe my success to is just that I understand social dynamics and I understand networking. So the power of networking, yeah.
So social dynamics is interesting because I know you talk a lot about that, not just finance. And we're going to get to that. But
sure. You
said you didn't really know what you were doing in your 20s, maybe a little bit in your 30s. I don't know. But what I do know is you made a good call quite a few years ago and you bought a lot of Bitcoin. So how did you even hear about Bitcoin? And may I ask, what price did you buy it at?
Sure. I got to give a shout out to Adrian, who one of the co-founders of Eternity NFT platform. But I was broke as shit at 25. So to all the 25-year-olds out there, like, life's a marathon, especially your financial life is a marathon. Most people do not start making real money until their late 30s, early 40s. And so I went from being...
What's real money, by the way?
I'm saying, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Okay.
I mean, on like a baseline. Obviously, you know, there's people that made millions and I'm saying annual income, right? But I went from being, like, again, a broke party boy in Miami. I got paid in drink tickets and fun times and, you know, clubs and women. And that was great. But I would go home and sleep on, like, my buddy's couch. So in your early 20s, I actually actively encourage people to just fuck about. Like, just figure it out. Figure out what you're into. But most importantly, figure out what you're not into. Like, where do you not, like, I almost went to law school. Thank God that I did not end up in law school. I would have been a horrible lawyer. I don't like to read all that much, especially boring stuff. But I got a job. I was always good at, because I did stand-up comedy. I was always a nightlife person. So sales was always going to be the avenue that I was going to make money. So I went and I got into finance. What was your initial question? How did I get into that?
How'd you get into Bitcoin?
Oh, Bitcoin. So I crushed it in finance. Over the course of 10 years, I made X amount of $1 million. And when I was 35 years old, I was going through a breakup with a British girl. No offense to the Brits out there. You're great. You're lovely. We're still friends. But I was like, all right, I've got all this money. I'm free. I'm single. What the hell do I want to do with my free time? What I call chilling. So I've developed like this 6-step plan to understanding your money, right? And step 6 is when you are chilling. Chilling is when you own your time. You don't have to wake up and run off to work or do anything. Just what do you want to do today? It's your life, right? Most people, when I ask them, what do you want to do if you're chilling? I say, if you were chilling, you had millions of dollars in the bank, whatever the number is, whether it's a million, 10 million, $100 million, what would you do with your free time if you were quote unquote chilling? And everyone says the same 3 things. Number 1, you want to travel. Number 2, you want to pursue a passion. Number 3, you want to give back and donate your time. And the last one that most people want to do is leave a legacy, whether that's with your family, whether that's philanthropically, whether that's with a company, like leave a legacy. So I said, all right, what's my chilling? I've already partied. I'm from Miami. I've already partied enough for 10 lifetimes. I've already traveled the world. I've had a good time. Now what the hell do I want to do? And I started a show to teach millennials basically how to save that money. And I invested into starting up a show, much like you're doing here, right? But I had some capital, and this was right around the time, 2016, to answer your question. I started hearing about Bitcoin more and more and more and more. And my buddy Adrian was like, yo, bro, like, let me get 10 grand. I was like, for what? He's like, for Bitcoin, man. I'm like, Bitcoin, Bitty Bops, crypto, blockchain. I didn't know none of it. I just called it Bitty Bops. And let me get 10 grand. All right, fine, whatever. Hey, let me get another 10 grand. I'm like, all right, cool. This is your best friend asking you for money. He's never asked me for money. And 50 grand later, I'm like, all right, what the fuck is this Bitcoin thing? But I trust him. You asked what price I got it at. What was the price in 2016, 2017?
I don't even. Was it before 10, the pump? Was it before the?
It was before it hit 18 and then crashed.
Oh, okay,
was that
fine.
The number?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was before that.
Okay.
So with my background in finance, because I'm a big stock investor. That's S&P 500 index fund, like, you know, dollar cost averaging. That's just very, very normal for me. And Bitcoin crashed. And he's like, so what do you want? Do you want to sell it? I'm like, no, that's not what you do with an asset class you believe in. You buy and hold. And then I found out it's not hold, it's hodl.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So then with my show, basically the way I started my show is I went around interviewing all the financial advisors that I deal with. Right. So, for my hedge fund, I'm basically a financial wholesaler. I deal with, estate planners, financial advisors, insurance agents, brokerages, and they come to me and for what my niche is, right? But so I would go to all these financial conferences and interview the best of the best, brightest minds in finance, insurance, investments, whatever. And then through Adrian, because he was working with a crypto trader on CNBC.
Yes.
With Rand. What's Rand's last name?
Nuna.
Rand. And he would get me access to all these Bitcoin events. Right. And easily enough, a lot of them were in Florida. So I would go to these events and I would interview these Bitcoin enthusiasts. And quite admittedly, I thought it was weirdos. And I mean, this is 2017. It was not,
it's still
pop
not that
culture.
Cool. It's still not
no,
that
it's
cool.
It's much cooler now. Like, you were at the Bitcoin conference here, like Logic's performing, Steve Aoki, like they're throwing banger concerts.
Right.
But then it was like weird fringe people, like Forex people. You know, I don't even know if they were libertarians at that point. I don't know, but it was very new. And admittedly, I was like, yeah, I'll go because it's interesting. But I was almost laughing. I don't want to like be disparaging, but I was like, I went to film content. I wasn't going because these people are changing the world. I do have a different perspective on it now because your perspective can change when your information that you're digesting changes. So yeah, that's when I learned about crypto. I interviewed this one lady and she's like, I left my man and I fell in love with Bitcoin. Oof. And I was like, this lady's leaving her man to go after Bitcoin. So that's when I started realizing, all right, this is a real thing. And then obviously during COVID, and we saw what happened with Bitcoin. But yeah, I got involved in 2016, 17, but not because I was a believer, because I believed in the person that was pitching me.
So you said you have a different perspective now. How's that changed?
Well, I mean, if your perspective hasn't changed since 2017 and it's 2022, like on everything, whether that's politics, whether that's business, whether that's relationships, whether that's the economy, whether that's, you know, just the global marketplace, whether it's COVID, whether it's China, whether it's fucking Bitcoin.
Well, what's your perspective on Bitcoin now?
Well, I think it's, again, if you believe in the asset class, you're there for the long term. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just bought, like I told you, I asked you the other day, I'm like, should I buy Bitcoin? And you're like, yeah, buy some. And I asked you where you thought the low mark would be. I thought you said like maybe like 15-ish.
Potentially.
Okay, potentially. So I bought like three more Bitcoin at 20. So, and I asked Adrian, Eternity guy, I was like, should I buy more? Because I'm just sitting on cash here. And he's like, hold off. Not yet. Not yet. So I follow what the big boys do. And I remember when like Tesla started buying Bitcoin, Elon Musk, and MicroStrategy's Michael Saylor, who I've interviewed. And, you know, a lot of the people that were dabbling and dipping their toes into Bitcoin, the number that I saw was between 3% and 8%. So the big boys, I'm talking massive hedge funds, banks, you know, Teslas of the world, 3% and 8% of their cash reserve. So I've employed that exact same strategy. So if I've got 100 grand, I'll take, you know, 3% to 8% of it and pump that into Bitcoin. So it all depends on what you're, you know, is palatable to you.
So let's talk about those strategies. You're the finance guy. You set up this podcast so that you could help educate millennials about finance. So in your opinion, where do you think people are going wrong when it comes to money? What don't they understand?
Yeah, I mean, I say this all the time, is that we all go to school. We take the same boring classes, algebra, biology, chemistry, trigonometry. I took wood shop. There's 0% chance that I'm cutting wood in my life. But they don't teach you about money. They don't teach you money classes. They don't teach you money management. They don't teach you about investing. They don't teach you about the stock market. They don't teach you about taxes. They don't teach you about any of the principles that you're going to need when you're a grown up. And it's a part of it is because a teacher who makes 40, 50 grand a year, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They're teaching history or algebra or calculus, but there's no classes like that. So I go to schools and I speak at these schools and I'm like, show of hands if you guys understand appreciation, depreciation, how money works, stock market. And like, you have 10th graders, 11th graders, they're like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. But those same kids know about crypto these days though. So that's the difference. Crypto has basically pierced through to be part of the pop culture nomenclature that kids kind of understand. The problem, and this is the good and the bad of Bitcoin, is that you don't start with Bitcoin. You need to start with like understanding cash flow, budgeting, have a game plan for your money, getting out of debt, not getting into debt, understanding having cash reserves, right? Most of Americans don't have 10 grand. I tell people to have 10 grand to your life before you start trying to become a millionaire, right? Like there's levels to this. You go from 1,000 to 10,000 to 100,000 to a millionaire. You don't go from $1,000 to a millionaire. Like it's just not going to work out well for you. So Bitcoin has done a great job in getting people to like understand finance, but you know, you got to crawl before you walk, walk before you run, run before you run a marathon. Some people these days, especially young people, just think that it's easy. You buy Dogecoin and you're an overnight millionaire. It doesn't work like that.
But what aren't people understanding? You said most people don't have 10 grand to their name. So why, like in what way are they so financially illiterate?
Yeah, I think people are, I almost said people are smart and then I caught myself. Some people are smart. Most people are smart. But there's a difference between book smart, going to school, taking classes, and understanding how money works. Understand the difference between wants and needs. Understanding what a basic budget is, right? One of the things I always say about having a budget is like the only thing worse than doing a monthly budget is not doing a monthly budget, right? So if you have 10 grand coming in every month and you have 10 grand going out every month, you know, it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. So it's a lot of, so this is what I'll give you this. 50% of money management is knowledge, right? I understand. I want to get out of debt. I want to make money. I want to say, I get it. But the other 50% is behavioral. Are your actions following what your knowledge is? It's almost like, yeah, for instance, 70% of Americans are overweight, whatever it is. They know that they shouldn't have 4 cheeseburgers for dinner. They know that they shouldn't get wasted and have pizza, right? Like I used to do back in the day in South Beach, like, yeah. And I got fat for a little bit. Like, you know that you need to work out. So you know these things, just like with money. You know you need to save. You know you need to get off debt. You know that with your tax refund for 5 grand, you could either pump that into a Roth IRA or go to fucking Mykonos, but are your actions mirroring what the knowledge tells you to do? And most people don't do that.
So how do people get it right?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, right? So, I mean, it comes with having the knowledge base. So if you just don't know how to budget or how cash flow works or what interest rates are, like, yeah, read a book. There's like The Millionaire Next Door, How to Get Rich, Think and Grow Rich, right? There's, you know, The Richest Man in Babylon. There's tons and tons of books that you can read for knowledge. But if you're not, you know, performing what the knowledge tells you to do, it's like, how many people read exercise books? That's great. You know how to do it. But are you getting in the gym? Most people need a kick in the ass and say, no, don't go out Saturday night, bro. You're broke as shit. Stay in the house. Like, if you, I want to go out. I want to meet a girl. It's like, yeah, you know, well, if you do meet the girl and you're broke, how is that going to serve you? So is your knowledge aligned with your actions? Most people don't have the knowledge and certainly don't have the actions to mirror what the knowledge should tell them to do. So it's a learning curve. It's a learning process. And the quicker you can learn it, the better off you'll be, because life gets more expensive as you go on. Your 30s are more expensive than your 20s. Your 40s are more expensive than your 30s. Because you're going to grow up. You've got a mortgage. You've got kids. You've got family. Life's only going to get more expensive. So the quicker you can learn basic financial lessons, have a decent foundation for your home, your financial home, the better off you'll be in the long run. At 35, like, I went from broke as F at 25 to being a millionaire at 35. Okay? Did I do anything magical? I didn't buy Dogecoin and just wish on a star. I put in the work. I had work ethic. I networked my ass off. Okay. I hung around the right people. If I had let's say I made 50 grand in a month, because I've had some amazing months where I've made hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I've had months where I've made nothing. But over the course of time, if I made 100 grand in a month, like the other day, this is a story we tell in the podcast. I made 150 grand in April. Okay. 1 month. And Patrick, but David goes, what did you buy? And I go, yeah, I bought a new suit. He goes, how much did that cost? $500. He goes, that's it. I actually got some white shirts at H&M. I spent probably another $80. So I spent $580 versus I could have spent 50 grand. I could have gone to the club. I could have bought bottles. I could have bought a ridiculous car. Ultimately, who I am, we're all learning who we are every year. Like, if you're not adjusting and learning, I realized that I'm a minimalist who has become a millionaire. So I don't spend a lot of money on myself. When I do have a girl in my life, I tend to spend a lot of money on her because I don't really care. Like, I could buy a, oh shit. Sorry.
You're fine. What could you buy?
Gideon. I could have bought a Rolex, I bought Bitcoin. Okay. I could have bought a ridiculous car. I haven't had a car in 11 years.
Oh wow.
I'm sort of redefining what it is to be wealthy. Like, again, with the chilling thing, I like to own my time. I don't need luxury goods. I don't need to have ridiculous cars and chains to tell me, all right, you're wealthy. It's like, I look at my bank account. It's like, life's going okay. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. Mm. And I feel like a lot of people, especially millennials, you're familiar with the acronym HENRYs?
No.
High earners, not rich yet, millennials. So 50% of millennials are making 100 grand or more a year are living paycheck to paycheck. That is the exact opposite of the stuff that I condone.
Right.
If you're making 100 grand a year, live off 50 of it. Have a roommate. You're a millennial. You're 28 years old, whatever. Like, don't grow up too quick. Yeah. And save that money, right? So that's my entire catchphrase is save that money. Because if you start saving now and start investing now and hodl Bitcoin now, by the time you're 40, you're chilling the rest of your life. The problem, you ever hear what Bernie Sanders says about boomers?
No, what did he say?
Okay, so I'll do a little Bernie Sanders impression right there. Oh, well, like, God. When he was running for president, not that I'm a Bernie Sanders advocate, yeah, but I'm think he's quite humorous. He goes, do you understand that 50% of baby boomers have zero saved for retirement? Zero. Mm-hmm. So you know what happens if you have zero saved for retirement? It's because people are living longer. They used to die at 65. That's why Social Security kicks in at 62 or 65. You'd live to 67. It's like you have an insurance plan from the government for 2-3 years. Okay. Now you live to 80, 90, 100, no problem. You want to be on the government plan for the next 30, 40 years? Not me. So the quicker you understand that you're going to need money way longer than you think, the biggest emphasis is understanding the difference between your wants today and your needs tomorrow. Mm. So right now, my mom, who's you know, doing healthy. She's 71 years old. She doesn't have money. Thank God she has a successful son that pays her bills straight up. But a lot of people are going to be dealing with that problem, especially if your parents haven't saved that money. So if your parents haven't done it, you're going to probably have to do it for them.
Yeah, it's a sad reality, but I'm happy that your mom has you. That's great. Thank That's you. Important.
She sends her love, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Not that I've met anything, but there you go. Okay, so the game is changing. You've been in the finance mm-hmm. business for a while. You're 41 now, you said, so it's been a while. So how has the game changed, and how do people make money now? Is it really online? Is online the best way to start earning mm-hmm. for young people?
Yeah, well, I mean, the barriers of entry have all been taken down.
Right.
So I say this all the time that, you know, in the 90s, not that I was in finance in the 90s, but I watched all those movies, you know, Boiler Room, Wolf of Wall Street, which was, you know, obviously in the 10 years ago, but based in the 90s, all those movies, Wall Street, Greed is Good, the whole thing. If you wanted to trade stock or even crypto for that matter, didn't exist, but let's use today's terms, you would have to pick up the phone, one of your old school Zach Morris phones. Shout out to the Saved by the Bell watchers out there. Do you even know what that is?
Yes, I watched
okay.
it.
rest in peace, Screech.
Did he die?
Oh, yeah.
When?
Yeah.
Was it a while ago?
Last year.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. There you go.
Sorry, Dustin Diamond. I apologize. but you'd have to pick up the phone, make a call to your stockbroker, or they would cold call you, you know, like the pink sheets that they talked about in Wolf of Wall Street. And you would have to negotiate what you wanted to spend in the stock market with some shady guy on the other side of the phone. Not that all financial advisors are shady, but this was the reality of the 90s. And this is how Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street, made all his money, by scamming people on the phone and employing hundreds and hundreds of other people to make calls on the phone. But now that person, you don't need that person anymore. You could log on to a variety of exchanges and just get online yourself, you know, whether that's a robo-advisor, a fee-based broker, or whether that's a, you know, BitMEX or any of the crypto accounts out there, crypto.com or what is it? FX?
BitMEX.
BitMEX. It's only BitMEX. I don't know why I'm naming other things. Clearly, that's BitMEX. The only thing that's going on. but the barrier of entry is now gone. Mm-hmm. Just like in media, just like in social media. That's why Valuetainment is so successful. We didn't have to wait around for us to get plucked out by a network, you know, CNBC or NBC or Fox and say, hey, you guys are great. No, we're just going to start our own thing. I mean, just like at you. Like you, I know you're on media networks, but yes. You can't count on that unless you want to be a full-time media network pundit. So you're just starting it. So the barrier to entry is no longer there. Crypto, media, all that. So you don't need to go through the typical channels. So young people have an amazing ability to kind of use tech to their advantage. So have at it, guys.
But what do you do if you don't have any capital to start off with? You know, you can't invest in the business, whether it's, you know, hiring a studio like this or whether it's hiring employees. What do you do if you don't have any capital?
I mean, if you don't have any capital, what the hell can you do? I mean, you have to work. So people are scared of working these days. So, you know, since the pandemic, how many people were unemployed getting out of just like copping out? Work ethic is a thing that I don't know, for whatever reason, is it frowned upon? I mean, you're younger than me. Is work ethic frowned upon these days? Like I had to work to get to the point of making my first year that I got involved in finance, I made $5,000. In 1 year, Leia. Mm-hmm. My next year, I made $100,000. The year after that, I made $250,000. The year after that, I made $500,000. But I started at $5,000. Why? Because I was dialing for dollars like crazy. I wasn't doing like the Jordan Belfort shady stuff because I'm with the same firm 5 years later. We're great. We're good. FINRA approved the whole thing. But you have to work.
Yeah.
You know, so hard work, you know, they say don't work hard, work smart. Yeah, up to a certain point. Work your ass off, work hard. And then once like, you've lifted the boulder up the mountain, then you can start working smart. You can't just start working smart if you have no work ethic and no money. So sometimes you just got to put in the work, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's that whole participation trophy thing, which has sort of ruined the younger generation, and everyone is sort of entitled and thinks, you know, things should just come to them, and why do I have to work hard? Can't, you know, the government give me a loan to start investing in my company? And
the government?
I'm not speaking on behalf of me, that's for sure.
By the way, I wore this for you.
Why?
Because it's the color
of Bitcoin. Oh, it's Bitcoin. Thank you. Yeah, well, it's a bit yellow, but it's a good color.
I don't have, what is it, Bitcoin orange?
Yes.
What is it?
Yeah,
okay,
orange.
I apologize.
Yeah. No, you're good. Okay, so, you know, what you're talking about is very much the modern day entrepreneur, right? That's what you're talking about. So how do you get into that mindset? Because I think a lot of people are afraid to leave that 9 to 5. You know, maybe they've built up capital. So how do you switch that mindset?
Well, you don't have to be an entrepreneur. You could also be an intrapreneur.
What is that?
You familiar with that term?
I've heard it, but I
okay. So,
define
like,
it.
I'm actually an intrapreneur. I've never started a business. That's not my MO. I'm a networker. I'm a sales guy. I like they send me out to hunt and bring in leads and make contacts and make friends and make connections and make all sorts of you know, putting fluttering out there. Know your skill set. I think is what, like, you don't have to be the person that puts down the capital, that starts the business, that has the idea. You can be the number two guy, or you can be the number three guy or girl or whatever at your company. You don't have to be the number one. Something that Patrick and I always talk about is know if you're a number one or not. Okay, so you could be a number four. You could be at a Fortune 500 company and be a number eight and have an amazing exit. You don't have to be the number one. I learned that I'm not, like, my best skill set is not the number one, because I don't want to deal with overhead. I want to enjoy my weekends. I don't want to have the stress. Like, there's certain traits that an entrepreneur has to have. Like, you're familiar with the iceberg effect? Like,
can
a lot of people only see the top
yes.
of the success, like the money, the cars, the women, the whatever it is. They don't see the bottom half of the glacier, the iceberg. That's the hard work, the perseverance, the late nights, the rejections, all that stuff. And whether you're an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur, you're still going to deal with that. But the entrepreneur, shout out to the entrepreneurs out there, they lay it all on the line, okay? Like, if your business fails, they fail, right? If you're an intrapreneur, you have a business within the business. So whether my, like, in my financial firm, I don't own the firm. I'm the top sales guy, but I don't have overhead. I don't have staff. I don't have underwriters. I don't have to pay the taxes. I don't have to pay the rent. Like, that's not my, like, I don't want to deal with that. I want to crush it. I want to make money, take my commissions. I'm out. So if you find yourself saying, well, I don't know what I want to do. Like, I don't want to do the 9 to 5 thing, but I don't know if I'm cut out to be an entrepreneur. You can. There's a middle ground called the intrapreneur that you can build the business and work, you know, side by side with the CEO, founder, what have you, and be the intrapreneur. So you don't need to, again, quit your 9 to 5 or take out a loan from the government or whatever. You can just find a business that you align with and go crush it with that person. And by the way, like, one of the more famous entrepreneurs of all time is Steve Ballmer. Steve Ballmer, Microsoft, Bill Gates, hello. Steve Ballmer is the top 20 richest people in the world right now. He owns the LA Clippers. He was never the CEO. He's never the founder. He might at one point been the CEO, but he didn't start the company.
Right.
He wasn't the number one. So he was an entrepreneur who grew. Look at Apple. Tim... What, I'm like losing. I'm having a Trump moment. Tim Cook.
Tim
yeah,
Cook.
Thank you, Gideon.
Gideon, there you go. We have the producer.
Amazing producer. Tim, like, you remember when Trump was like, "I'm here with Tim Apple," and he's like, "I didn't say Tim Apple." He's like, "No, we caught it on camera. You did not say."
Oh,
Tim
he said
Cook.
Tim Apple. Yeah. I haven't seen that.
Anyway,
check
but
that out.
Tim Apple didn't found. Tim Cook didn't found Apple.
Right.
But he worked his way up. So, the new person at Google, the new person at Twitter, like. Well, we'll see what happens with Elon.
Yeah.
But all these people, they don't have to found the company. You don't have to be the number one entrepreneur. You can work your way up and, you know, good things gotta happen.
No, I think that's a great advice, actually. I think that makes a lot of sense. It's important to know what your skill sets are and work and monetize that, focus on that. But your content is changing a little bit, right? So you're initially talking about finance, but I've noticed you're speaking a lot with the guys from Fresh and Fit. You've had Rolo, who I recently had on the show. You've spoken a lot with him, talking a lot about dating and everything like that. So talk to me about what you're trying to do. Why are you talking about dating and why are you interested in that as opposed to finance?
Yeah, well, it's, thank you. Number one, I think it's just more interesting.
It is interesting.
I enjoyed a lot more, but I think there's a need for both. And I think there's a need for someone who understands both, right? Like, so for instance, Rolo, good friend, he understands intersexual dynamics better than anyone in the world, but he's not a money guy, right? Fresh and Fit, shout out to those guys. They crush it. They interview tons of women. They're not money guys. You know, they're learning. Myron especially, I think he's investing more in real estate. Fresh is more buying like jewelry and cars, more power to you. But there's not a lot of money guys out there talking about relationships. Because for any guys out there, like, why are you making money? Okay, so on the surface, so you can pay your bills. But then, like, once you're past the bills, you know, they say that the most people need to make $75,000 a year to be quote unquote happy. We can have a whole conversation on what happiness is. But once you reach a certain level, why are you making all this money? To keep up with the Joneses, to have a nice car, to impress women? What's like your motivating factor to having this money? Because it's not just like, yeah, bro, I made more money than you. It's like what, like a competitive situation with your boys. A lot of times you need money to take out women. Mm-hmm. And women, if there's one underlying theme with women, women like to have fun. Yeah. Like Cyndi Lauper, girls just want to have fun. I think that's very true. Girls just want to have fun, whether that's with a rich guy, whether that's a broke guy who's good looking, whether that's with a cool guy, like whether it's a funny guy. Like, why do you think funny guys, comedian? I used to do stand-up comedy. I used to get girls when I was broke as shit just because I was funny, right? Girls want to have fun. The other side of that is having fun costs money. Mm-hmm. Going on trips costs money. Going to nice dinners costs money. Going to freaking Disneyland costs money. Like, going out costs money. So, you know, the intersection where I say is like my show, Sazcast, is where romance meets finance, right? Mm-hmm. Where money and relationships meet, because there's an intersection right there. Like, show me, like, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of crypto people out there. There's some nerds out there that, not that crypto people are nerds, but that have made a lot of money, whether it's drop shipping, social media, but they just sit at a computer all day. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much money they have. They're never going to go out there into the real world and meet a beautiful woman or, you know, conversely, a guy, whatever, I don't know what you're into. But you need both, okay? So it's very interesting to me, and I think a lot of men, especially young men, really need help these days. When I was growing up, let me tell you something, Leah. Back in the day, in the 90s, early 90s, you had to have fucking balls. Why? Because you needed to pick up the phone, a landline, dial the number.
Her father will pick up?
The father would pick up and, hey, can I speak with Brittany? Who's this? This is Adam from her class. What do you want from her? I got to talk to her about homework. It wasn't homework. Hold on, right? And you're dealing with the fucking father knowing that you're calling to take his daughter out. So you had to maneuver that, like, in a totally different way that exists today. Today, you get a girl's Snapchat, Instagram, whatever. You just DM them, hey, what up? You up? Whatever. That's a lot different than when guys my age, late 30s, early 40s, had to go out and quote-unquote hunt. So men these days, they have it very easy in certain ways. You just get a girl's Instagram, slide in the DM. But that doesn't mean you have game in real life. That doesn't mean you know how to, like, maneuver when the father shows up, or whether that's a metaphor for whatever hurdle gets thrown your way. So, you know, Rollo talks about the lost boy generation, that men aren't being men anymore. Because a lot of times it's too easy. They expect overnight results. They don't want to put in the work. This goes back to work ethic. So, you know, I believe, as being the oldest millennial.
Are you a millennial?
Yeah, the oldest millennial.
What year were you born?
1981, right? So
I'm the youngest millennial.
You're what year?
96.
Okay. So, like, I'm the oldest, you're the youngest. Yeah. So being the oldest millennial, it's actually a term, like, if you're born in 1980 or 78 to 82, you're what's called a zennial. You're on the fringe of Gen X and millennials, right? And you can, if you grew up a little too soon, you might be a Gen Xer. If you took a while to grow up, like a Miami party boy like me, you might be more of a millennial. But you understand what it was like when you had to dial the phone and get a girl's, like, on the phone, or, you know, her father picks up. So you understand the difference of what was going on in the 90s before social media, but you also have a good grasp on what's going on now. So Gen Z, on the other hand, they've never had to have landlines or deal with any of the hurdles that comes with all that stuff. Everything's at a press of a button. So I think I have a unique knowledge, like a unique skill set that kind of bridges, like, the old school mentality and the new school mentality. Because what's the whole knock with the, hey, what's up, boomer? Your average 60-year-old isn't going to understand that, whereas your average 18-year-old has no idea what it was like in the 90s. And look, what year did the iPhone really come out? Like, what year did it really make a splash?
I was in school. We had the BlackBerry first, and then with the iPhone.
Of course. Yeah, we all had BlackBerries.
2008. No, it was later. I think it was like 2011. Everyone really got an iPhone. That's when we switched. Yeah.
Late 2000s, from what I recall. Like 2007, 2008. Think about that. So yeah. 15 years ago, we didn't have any of what we have now. No social media. Yeah. I mean, people weren't on the internet, but it was like you, maybe you're on AOL, like in some weird rumor, like you know, or, but it's just so new. And it's just, we don't know what the future is going to hold. But I feel like, you know, if you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. So, you know, there's a certain knowledge base that you have if you're in your late 30s, early 40s, that maybe someone doesn't have in their early 20s, or certainly someone who's kind of like missed the boat. Like, I have friends who are in their early 40s, mid 40s, that, dude, they got no clue what's going on with social media. They completely missed the boat. So the older, you know, older millennials, late 30s, early 40s, the ones that capitalized on social media, they're killing the game right now. Whereas people maybe a year or two older than them, they're like, I don't know all that. They're lost in the sauce. They're still maybe on Facebook and that's it. So it's a learning curve.
So your podcast is, would you say it's sort of to empower men and teach men how to have game, how to do better in today's dating scene?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, especially because I'm not like the expert on that. I have a lot of expertise in that. I grew up in Miami and South Beach. I've owned bars, club promoter, the whole thing. I've been around women like my entire life, but that's not what I've dedicated my life to. Business-wise, socially, yeah, I know as much as anyone you've mentioned. I've been out and partied more than any of them. And I can, the pop culture scene that I've been in because of South Beach and because of my inroads in the NBA is way further advantage than a lot of people that talk about this. But someone like Rolo writes books about this stuff. So I have people like him on my show and a panel. So as an example, I'll have a feminist on, a housewife, a intersexual dynamics expert like Rolo, fresh and fit on, and like have them all debate. And I'm there just to kind of curate answers. And I don't like my whole, like I'm very chameleon like. Like I could be funny and like cool and chill, or I could be like, yo, listen, motherfucker, like, you know, here's the deal. Like I can kind of go with the flow. And that's goes back to the power of networking, is understanding like who you are in the social dynamic structure. But on my show, I'm more of like a host willing to understand all sides rather than kind of like there's people that this is my opinion and they can just go on hours for that. That's not me.
So what have you learned? What is some of the biggest problems in the dating scene right now?
The number one things that comes to mind has to do with women.
Okay.
And understanding what has changed because of feminism. And this was not something that I was aware of a year ago. And it's something that I talk about all the time, is that you know, a stat came out recently, and fact check this all you want, 45% of working women between the ages of 25 and 45, right? By the year 2030, so in 8 years from now, 45% of women are going to be non-married and childless, okay? So women that have been empowered by feminism, and that's awesome, work, make your money, you're equal, all that, love women, like women are the number one, and this is going to be controversial, the number one commodity in the world. I don't mean that like in a possession type of way. Diamonds, jewels, you know, gold, bracelet. Women are the number one thing. People go to wars over women, okay?
Yeah.
So I respect women. I love women like 100%. But women have to understand what their role is in society. For millions of years, there was the hunter-gatherer society, and the women was raising the house, raising the children, taking care of the home, being a good mother. The most important role of a woman is to be a mother, bar none, full stop. But now, women can make money. You know, in 1980, there was a movie that came out, Working 9 to 5, Dolly Parton. You've seen that? Working 9 to 5, like that whole thing. And like that sparked very much a feminine revolution. I can make my money. I can do my own thing. Okay, great. And I'm not saying that all women, you know, are monetized sexually, but a large swath of them are. So now we talked about the barriers to entry. Look at OnlyFans now. I can't tell you how many girls I meet that do OnlyFans.
Really? I've never met a girl that does OnlyFans.
Oh my God, Leia. I mean, you've been to Miami once or twice. They're out there, okay? And they're not going to just come out and say, hey, what do you do for work? I do OnlyFans. Like, well, you know, I model, I do whatever. But
interesting.
The more money that a woman makes, so they talk about this all the time. Guys don't care how much money a woman makes. I had this conversation with a girl that I'm kind of talking to these days. She's like, yeah, you know, I'll tell you a story. So we were at, this was last week, There was a big event in Miami called Rolling Loud. Are you familiar with that? Huge hip hop festival. And Travis Scott was at the after party at a place called 11. Familiar with that?
I've heard of it.
Okay. So we go there and I get us in. There's six of us, group, good. Like, I know the guy, we're good. You know, networking, the power of networking. Like, we're good. There's a huge line outside. We get in. The girls are like super impressed. Like, that was awesome. So we go in and the girl goes, let's go take out $1,000 and make it rain. I go,
Of your money or her money?
Well, right. So I go, okay, where are we going to get this $1,000? And there's like an ATM type, it's like a teller. It's not like a normal ATM. Like, you go to like the strip club teller to take the money out. She goes, okay, go. And I'm like, well, I'm taking the money out. You're the one that wants to take the money out.
This is the girl you're dating?
No, like a girl that like I was hanging out, like a friend, like a girl, like.
Red flag, bro, red flag.
Yeah, well, that's what my nickname for her.
That's your nickname for her, yeah. Red flag?
Yeah, I'm not even joking.
That's awful.
So I say, well, no, I'm not taking out $1,000. Like, no, I'm good. By the way, it's like 5 a.m. I'm ready to go home anyway. And she goes, well, let's just do 500. And I go, well, I'll tell you what. Whatever you take out, I'll take out.
Look at that.
So whatever you want to do, I'll do. But like, meet me halfway. Don't just expect the guy. And this is a problem. So some guys, they're either going to be too broke to go consider taking out $1,000. Some guys are going to just be like, well, she's really hot. And my only way to, you know, ingratiate myself with this girl is proving to her that I can do this. Or there's some guys that are like, yeah, I have the money, but I'm not doing shit. Like that's not
what
I'm
doing
at all.
Was she hot?
Yeah.
How old was she?
Late 20s.
Okay.
So, but the point is this. When I was like, well, why don't you go take out half? And I'll take it out. She's like, no, you know, whatever. And then we got into a whole conversation about, we got to take care of these girls, you know? And I was like, what do you mean take care of these? These are strippers. And fast forward, she does OnlyFans, okay? So there's this mindset that like girls, they're doing it. They take care of other girls, whatever. And I was like, yeah, that's not my thing at all. Like, you do realize that my entire brand is save that money for these exact type instances. She goes, no, I get it. I'm like, but back to my point, women are making more money than ever. By the way, this girl lives in a sick place. She's making a ton of money. I'm sure she has more than one OnlyFans, if you know what I mean. Like, she's doing very well. But I don't like the difference between a man and a woman. So let's say I make $500,000 a year. And let's say a girl makes $100,000 a year, or even $500,000 a year for that matter. The guy's going to be, let's say we live together or we go. The guy's paying for pretty much everything, paying the rent. If we go on vacation, I'm taking care of the vacation. If we're going for dinners, I'm paying for dinners. Like, I'm not asking you to do anything other than just be pretty and pleasant and have a good time and have a great attitude.
Yeah.
Whereas the girl, whatever she makes, she's not spending on the guy. So you asked like the initial like dating relationships, like guys need to understand how this works with their money, right? So most like Fresh and Fit always talk about this. Like, I don't care what a girl does. They say that. I'm like, no, I care what she does, but I don't care like the amount of money she makes, because she's not spending that on me. It's the guy's role to spend it on her. So, and you agree with me?
I agree with you. Yeah.
Why do you agree with me?
Ask me a more specific question.
So do you like, why do you agree that guys spend the money and girls don't spend the money on the guy?
Well, I mean, I personally value traditional gender roles, right?
Okay.
And so I enjoy the fact, like, I think that's what men should do. And I think that,
because I
agree with you when you said that, I think the most beautiful thing a woman can do is be a mother and raise children and have a family and, excuse this term, but serve her husband, right? Like, I personally think that that's...
Serve how?
So serve as in, like, make his life as easy as possible, right? Because he's the one that's paying for everything. And my brother's in the room and we were talking about this earlier today. Gideon goes, I just want my woman to cook me bacon and eggs and I'll pay for everything. All I'm asking is for bacon and eggs and a clean house. And it's true.
Is it that hard to ask for, though?
There's the producer over here getting worked up right now.
I know, because I think it's true. Look, if he's going to pay for everything, then why are you upset? And I did this video the other day and the video was saying, you know, men go out to work every single day and women are trying to complain and compete. And all he's asking is, you know, relax, stay home, please just be a nurturing mother. I will pay for everything. And women got really offended because they said that it's not relaxing to be a mother, right? Have you ever had a child, Leia? It's hard to take care of a child. I'm sure. But I can tell you, as someone that's got a business, that it's that I imagine it's harder to be an entrepreneur than it is to be a mother. Having an entrepreneur, having responsibilities like that, having to make that money without, you know, because you don't know how you're going to live the next day. There's nobody else to pay your bills. I'm the only one that pays my own bills, you know, and so that's very stressful. And I think that's more stressful than raising children and having a man that will guarantee a roof over your head and a financial system, sorry, not financial system, a judiciary system, which will guarantee that, right? Because if you get divorced, then don't worry, you've got the kid and the money. So you literally have it all sorted as a woman, basically.
Yeah. Do you think it's easier these days to be a man or a woman?
I think it's, okay, so I somewhat do think it's 50-50. I think if you're a high value man, which is, you know, like rich, successful, you know, you've got a game, you're exciting, you're fun, you're smart, you're intelligent, you're strong, right? The whole usual spiel. I think if you're that, then you own the world, right? I think what makes you a high value woman in the red pilled world, we'll go down that route, is young and beautiful and sweet and all that. But that, that can't last. So at least like men can, you know, because people age, right? So men have control over their sexual market value, whereas women don't have control because time ticks on. So yeah, that's why I think it's easier to be a man. Although I do understand that men have to become and women can just be. I respect that and I get that. But I think given the fact that you can actually do something about your value as a man, makes it easier to be a man. What do you think?
Well, by the way, there's no clear-cut answer, but I'll give you my opinion. This, by the way, this is way more exciting than just talking about investing in 401ks.
Well, we do it all.
I'm just saying, like, this is the reason that this type of content, I think, is so valuable, because there's so many different opinions on this. There's not a lot of different opinions on finance. I get, should you do in stock market or should you do real estate? But, like, you know, but so what I always say is, yeah, it's fucking hard to be a guy.
I'm sure.
Right? So, like, it took me multiple years, 10 years to go from broke as a joke, you know, to having money, to being a quote unquote high value man, whatever the hell that term, you know, is signifies, but having money, like being successful, having game, women, the whole thing. What percentage of men get to that point? Maybe 10%. Okay. But at least a man knows what he needs to do. Like, my whole thing is clarity. No matter what situation, I just need some clarity. Like, help me get clear on what we're trying to establish here. And for a man, it's very clear. Make money, you know, be good looking, be a gentleman, be suave, like be good to your lady,
have
be
sauce.
Good to your mom, like have what?
Sauce, like have a little bit of like.
So, I mean, that's literally my name, Sauce, but
there
thank you.
Go.
You. Like have a little something going on, like, but that's not easy to do. But again, clarity, you know what the fuck you got to do. Like run that way, run through the wall, kick ass. And if you work hard enough and if your mindset is right, you'll get there. Cool. So for a man, it's hard, but at least there's clarity. The problem with women is that there's a lack of clarity. Should you be a boss babe, an empowered woman, and like, I don't need no man kind of vibe? Or should you be a housewife, reliant on a man, raising kids, being a good mother, and being a good wife? Which one? Well, you're going to have half of women saying one thing and having half of women saying the other, whereas you have pretty much 100% of men saying, kick ass, make money, have success. So which one is it? If you're looking for clarity, it's much easier to be a man. Right? But for a woman, you know, it's flip a coin as to what you should do. The Andrew Tate, I know you've interviewed and we're working on getting him on Valuetainment. We're in discussions right now. He tells this story and I think it's so true because I've been on these types of parties, these yacht parties where there's four guys and 100 women. And he tells a story where he's like, you show me a yacht, right? And there's four guys on this yacht. All right, and 100 women. And there is no telling what these four men had to do, what kind of contribution to society they had, how much work ethic they need to have, how much people they needed to employ and impress and deals and wheeling and dealing. And maybe by the time they're 60 fucking years old, they get to kick back, relax, halfway bald and fat probably, by the way, but at least enjoy the spoils of the luxury of their labor. Whereas you have 100 women who are 20 to 30 years old, and all they had to go do was buy some fucking lipstick.
Hey, I've never been on a yacht.
Okay, well, you're
how do I get on a yacht? I've not been on a yacht.
How is that even possible?
I've not been on a yacht.
Because you're a boss babe. You're not just using your sexuality to
What's a boss babe?
Well, like a working woman, a woman who's like making, you know, her own money. Mm. Never heard that?
Like, I've heard it, but I think boss babe has really negative connotations.
I agree.
Boss babe is like, I'm a boss bitch. I don't need no man. Yeah. Like, fuck men. Like, that's not me.
I agree. Okay. I mean, I agree with you. However, making your own money and carving your own niche in this world is you. But
I just think that's human survival.
You think so?
Who else is going to pay my bills?
Well, according to a lot of women out there, a man.
Which one?
Well, you got to find.
I got to eat in between. I got to have somewhere to live. Do I live on the streets? And do I get a sugar daddy? No, I don't want that.
Well, a lot of women do.
I know,
but make her own money so she can get to the great places where the men are.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Yeah. Let's talk about this.
I like Gideon kind of being a great segue over there.
Wait, one thing you didn't mention.
I don't know if they can hear. I hope you guys can hear him. Do you want to hit, speak in this?
If the man makes $1 million, he's willing to spend it all on his girl to protect her, provide her. If the woman makes $1 million, she will not spend a dime. She'll keep it all in the bank. That's a huge point.
Yeah.
That's what you were saying.
Exactly.
That's what you were saying. And I think that is true. That's 100% true. Once you get into that relationship. Mm-hmm. But what you ask, oh yeah. So yeah, that boss babe thing is interesting because I come from a small little town just outside of London, right? Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, get a secretary job and just work a 9-to-5 and not make a lot of money. But it means I'm stuck in that situation where everyone's fat and gray and old, right? So there's no high value men or women, right? Nobody cares about anything.
In that situation, you're saying.
Right. Okay. So I'm like, so what do I need to do to, let's say, meet a man that I think would be equal value to me or, you know, someone that I would like and be happy with?
Well, I'm sure you discussed this before, but the whole concept of hypergamy, right?
Yeah.
You did this with Rolo when you're like, how tall does a guy need to be?
Yeah.
How much money does he need to make? What does he need to bring to the table? You know, women will only date across and above.
Right.
So men they'll bang the hot chick that works at Starbucks or the waitress or whatever, or they'll take, you know, the CEO type girl out there, you know, the attractive pundit, you know, type person out there. So roles are different. So
right. But what I'm saying is like everyone from that town was below, right? So as a woman, I want to date across or up. So everyone was below. So now
you need
I'm
to
like
leave that town.
Right. But how do I afford that? I got to make money. Mm-hmm. And so I make money and I did well and, you know, things are going well, which is great. But now I'm like apparently this boss bitch that doesn't need no man.
I never called you a bitch. Let's just.
Oh, sorry. Boss babe. But, okay. Sorry, boss babe.
No, you have like. The difference between you and those girls is you actually, number one, have a good understanding of the world. Number two, you have a good attitude. Yeah. A lot of those women have really horrible attitudes and they kind of like have a disdain for men and they just kind of like, they look at men as like a cash register, an ATM. And
yeah, I can't believe this chick is asking you for a grand.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah, well, you know.
That blows my mind. Sorry, I interrupted you. But yes, you were talking about how women have this negative relationship towards men.
Yeah, well, the look, you're going to be okay. Let me what was the initial question, though?
I don't know. It's just going back and forth at this point. We're talking about feminism and why it's going to mess things up.
Well, but this is back to my whole point, is that women, there's a lack of clarity. Should you go and find a man and be a housewife? Should you carve your own career? I'm an advocate of women getting their own career. Like, I don't think it should just be all men working. Like, how annoying is that? Just all men? What? Zero interaction with females in the world. So I am an advocate of women working. But the whole thing is, like your brother, you know, so poignantly pointed out, the women aren't going to spend their money on the man. So it's the man's job to provide and be the man, especially in a relationship. Whereas all the money that the woman makes, you know, they spend on themselves. It's hard being a woman. You think it's easy? Like, I've lived with girls, okay?
It's really hard.
Yeah, like you need money to walk out of your house every day. Makeup, hair, nails, looking good,
clothes.
I gotta get my nails
done. I gotta get my nails done this weekend. I gotta get
my hair
done.
A guy could roll up out of bed and just like throw on a t-shirt like, yo, what up? We're going to the gym. Like, it's much harder to be a woman. But at the same time, it's much easier to be a woman in certain social settings. Like, don't forget, a lot of my you know, the reason that I deal with money and game and all that. Just don't forget, I remember being 16, 18, 20 years old, going out to clubs in South Beach. And if I went with three of my buddies, we wouldn't get in. But if I went with three girls, I would get in and be in the VIP.
For sure.
Okay, so I'm like, holy shit, I'm learning things here. Dudes are kryptonite to a club unless you're buying bottles, unless you're spending cash, right? And I've been in more clubs than probably most people in this freaking world, okay? And I haven't spent a lot of money because I'm, again, a great networker. I know all the people in the clubs and the scene. Like, that's just what I do. But to be a man, like, I because I interview a lot of people, and I'll remember, I go to people in South, like, guys, groups of guys. What up, guys? Like, how's your time in South Beach? Fucking hate it here, man. Why, we didn't get into any clubs, bro. Yeah. Yeah, well, did you drop loot? No, we weren't going to spend $2,000 on a table. Well, it's like, would you want seven dudes in your club not spending money?
No.
But seven girls could roll up, and they'll give them a free bottle just to hang out. So to say that men and women aren't different in some capacity, especially when it comes to money and sexual market value, would be a complete lie. So no matter what it is, women are going to bring certain things to the table and men are going to bring certain things to the table. Men are going to have to bring money to the table in a lot of the cases. Women are going to have to bring attractiveness.
Yes, fertility and a good damn attitude.
Yeah.
I have a story for you as well. So when I was 20, I'd go to all the clubs in London, and it's the same vibe, right? It's like women getting free, promoters, bottles.
Notice how whether it's Miami or London or Sydney or Hong Kong, it's the same vibe.
100%.
Men spend money, women look good. Boom.
But it's shit, and I'll tell you why. Because I was living with my parents at the time, and my dad, every time I'd come home in the morning, would be like, did you meet any nice guys? And I'm like, no, dad, because you know who's in this damn club? Because I have no money, because I'm 20. So I go there to get in for free. Fat old men are in there. I'm 20. I don't want to be partying with fat old men. And so I'm there with these young girls. We're all having a great time looking, you know, our best, super youthful and amazing, whatever. And the waiter that worked there, he said to us, girls, we'll give you a free bottle of champagne if you could just entertain our clients. And I'm like, you're speaking to like three really like well-raised Jewish girls here. We're not entertaining any of your clients. Like, we don't need your champagne. And these were like really old fat men that wanted us to entertain whatever that meant.
Yeah.
And we're just like, we're raised way too well for this. No.
Okay.
But so, you know, it's
But what happens if they weren't fat and old and they were actually good looking guys in their 30s?
But they're not. That's the thing. They never were.
What are you talking about?
They never were. I went to a lot of clubs in London from like 18 to maybe like 22, and then I was bored. And now I don't go clubbing. I just talk.
That was what Rolo calls your hoe phase. Not that you were putting out or anything like that.
I never did.
Sorry, boys.
No, I never ever did. But no, it's what girls just want to have fun. It's a free time to
Cyndi Lauper.
Like, yeah, it's a free time to dance to some music with your girlfriends and have a great time. But no, there were never, ever, ever any attractive men in there. And dad, every time I came home, would say, meet any nice guys? No, dad. No.
Maybe it was just a horrible club because, you know,
I went to all of them in London.
Some pretty attractive men and women.
No, wow. Not in London. So that's why I'm always like, yeah, it's cool, you know, you get to go into clubs for free as a young woman, but it's like the kind of men that attracts isn't what you're looking for, because men can't get in unless they put down a ton of money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes men don't even want to put down a ton of money, you know, and I understand that. Why would you? Like you said, you've become a minimalist.
Yeah, the chances of me spending thousands of dollars at a club at this point in my life are so non-existent.
Exactly, there you go.
Because I've already done that, okay? So, you know, like that, as you grow, you learn a lot, but, you know, I've been to clubs, you know, venues, yachts, parties, like, you know, the whole, you know, wedding that I was a part of. I don't know if you're familiar with that whole thing. Like, I've had experience with the richest of the richest. And now it's like, I just want to be secure with my own situation. So but you have to learn that as you grow older. Like, you know, women, I feel like 30 is a major age for women. Women look at 30 and they, you know,
I'm 25. I'm freaking out.
You're perfect right now. But women, you know, reach an age at 30 that they kind of like, all right, biological clock's ticking. Like, what am I going to do? But men, I feel like for most men, that age is 40. When I turned 40 a year ago, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I broke up with my girl. I got this guy. I got to know what's going on. Like, so men and women age differently. So I learned that from none other than Kim Kardashian, by the way.
What did you learn? What happened?
Well, when she was 30, she was dating my best friend at the time. Well, still one of my best friends.
I know nothing about pop culture, but having spent some time in Miami earlier this year, is that the really tall guy?
What's his name? Player. His name is Chris Humphries.
He was at a Gemini party I went to. I had no idea. Someone just pointed him out to me and I was like, oh, okay.
At the Winklevoss?
Yes.
Yeah, we were at the same party. Had I not
seen
you
I bumped
there?
Into you. Right. Yeah, thanks. He was
great.
At the party.
You were drunk. Great memory.
I was not drunk.
There was hot guys there.
Were there?
Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss were there.
Tyler and Cameron, right. They're
the
attractive.
The mayor of Miami was there.
He's also attractive. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, anyway, I was there with him and like that crew. Well, as the story goes, so I used to be a pretty good basketball player. Like I played college football, a little college basketball, and I used to network with a lot of NBA guys. And I used to play basketball with that guy, Chris Humphries, back in the day in actually Minneapolis, where my mom is from, in the summers. We kept in touch. When he came down to Miami, he made it to the NBA. He was 19. He couldn't get into any of the clubs. So he would call me. We would get him into the club. And I don't think there's any, like, statute of limitations on, like, getting an underage person to the club in 2004. But
they're going to come for you now.
They're going to come for me. So we'd party together. We went from being like friends to good friends to one of his best friends. And fast forward, I mean, the guy's 6'9". He's made $50 million in the NBA. He's a good looking dude. Like if he ever tries to give me like, I remember this one, and I'll tell the Kim Kardashian story, but Chris would always tell, you know, all right guys, like this is advice to like how you should pick up chicks. And I go, dude, shut the fuck up. Don't even talk anymore. You're 6'9". You're good looking dude. You're worth $50 million. Don't tell all the rest of us your advice. Like, save it. That's like if, like, Gisele Bündchen walked in. She's like, ladies, listen. This is how you land a high-value man. It's like, you're a goddamn supermodel. You have to do is stand there and look good. Save it. Anyway, so Chris calls me one day out of the blue. And he goes, what up? Say what's up to my girl. She goes, hey, what's up, Adam? What's going on? You know, we're coming down to Miami next week. I go, who is this? She goes, it's Kim, silly. I'm like, Kim who? Kim Kardashian, like, I'm like, is this, like, and it sounds like her.
Right.
I'm like, what is happening right now? I go, throw Chris back on the phone. I go, dude, who are you with right now? He's like, dude, just, like, play cool. Like, yeah. Turns out it was Kim Kardashian. And they had this fairy tale romance. She was 30 years old. Back to my entire beginning point. She had just turned 30. And she was, quote, unquote, freaking out that she wasn't married yet. And she was dating my boy, and my boy's got a move where he tells a girl, I love you, within like the first 10 minutes. Hey, I think I love you. Like most people probably take a year to tell a girl that, right? That's like his move. And they, boom, fall in love, get engaged, the whole deal. Oh. I take a year out of my life to be a Kardashian. I'm not even kidding. Like we fly to Mexico together. We're on trips together. I'm staying at Kim's house in LA, Beverly Hills. Like, and we do this whole wedding. They fly us out. Zenya tuxedos, the whole thing. Like I'm walking Khloe Kardashian down the aisle, like the whole thing. Like Google it, whatever. But like I'm
thought
living,
we were friends. I didn't know this.
Yeah, well, this is why you ask these questions on podcasts. But so this whole thing happens, and I'm like friends are hitting me up, like, dude, you know Kim Kardashian? Like, what is happening right now, right? And boom, like that. Like they divorce after like 72 days, and I called her because we were friends. Like, she's my age, 41 years old currently. And I go, Kim, like, what happened? She goes, you know, I was in a hurry to get married because we've had these conversations before because Chris is 5 years younger than me. Chris is 37 years, 36 years, or whatever he is. She goes, yeah, I kind of rushed into it. She's like, this is not a phone call. And I go, well, you know, like, best of luck. I hope like the next wedding works out better for you, genuinely. And she goes, oh, honey, I'm the modern day Elizabeth Taylor. I'll probably be married a dozen times. Mm. Her words, I swear to God. And Elizabeth Taylor, I think, was married like 8 or 9 times. Now Kim has gone through, I don't know,
Kanye.
She's going to chew this guy, Pete Davidson, out. Yeah. Like he'll move on to something else. You'll see what's going to happen with this girl. But back to my initial point, this all really stemmed because she was 30 and freaking out. So, but there is some validity to that, because if we go back to my initial point before that, you know, 45% of women are going to be non-married and no kids by the time they're 20, 30.
So sad.
And if like your goal of a woman is to get married and have kids, you need to reassess what you're doing with your life, because men don't care about your job description or how much money you make. They care about different things.
So on that point, and I think this might be my final question, on that point then, something that I'm really curious about, I think the answer is different for different men. So let's get your take. Does it put you off whether a woman is successful, and also what she does for work, right? Because of course it's different if she's like the CEO and suited and booted of this company. I guess that's kind of off-putting. But yeah, does it put you off if a woman has money?
No, I don't think it puts you off. So,
because I get you don't care. That's fine.
No, because I do care. I'll tell you, not about the money, about what they do. I've never dated a woman who's more successful than me. Okay. Even when I didn't have money, I dated a girl. Like, we were both just kind of like in our 20s figuring things out. But, well, a lot of the girls I tend to date are younger and that whole thing. But I don't care. Like, I just want a woman who can actually just pay her own bills, because nothing is worse than having like kind of a leech of a girl that can't pay her own bills. So some guys are okay with that. Like a woman should have something that she's definitely passionate about, because like to just expect a woman to just sit home and all day and take care of the kids and the family and make sandwiches is really undermining of the value of a woman. A woman should have something that they're passionate about. I don't care if that's yoga or Bitcoin or, you know, pick a thing, photography, something that like drives them, that motivates them, but also, you know, at the same time, congruently taking care of the family, taking care of a man. Women have gone down this path where they need to be educated, they need to make money, you know, whether they believe it or not, don't need a man because they can pay their own bills. Where does that end? Where does that end? Where do they end up? I'll tell you a story that really resonated to me on my 40th birthday at Bodega here, in my, not here, but, you know, in Bodega in down in Miami. It was my 40th birthday and all my friends were there, and I was single. I'd recently broken up with a girl, and my boy shows up, Miguel, and he goes, "Yo, what up, Saza? How are you, bro? You're killing it, bro. You're 40 now. You got money. You're looking good, bro. You're killing it. Valuetainment. Like, dude, you're killing it, bro. I'm so proud of you." I'm like, "Yo, thank you, brother." He goes, "Oh shit, is that Laura over there, who we went to high school with?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "What's up with her?" Again, same age. I go, yeah, she's doing good. "She married yet, bro?" "No." "She got kids?" "No, I don't think so, man." "What's she up to?" I'm like, "Yeah, she's still working." He goes, "Damn, that sucks." And I go, "Oh, damn, there it is." Like, if you ever need a case example, I learned it on my 40th birthday, where I like spent a minute being like, "Damn, poor Laura over there." Where Adam, 40, successful, high value, whatever. But like, he's like, "Dude, you're the fucking man." And her, she's like, "What happened to her?" Because she was like the hottest thing in high school. And a lot of times women will, you know, in their 20s, "What? I haven't got nothing to lose. I'm all good. 26, cool. Okay, I got guys are coming at me. I'm 30. Okay, I'm kind of freaking out a little bit now, but I'm still 30 and I'm making money." Next thing you know, you're 35. And the guys who were approaching you, now they're more approaching the new batch of 21, 25 year old chicks. And you're kind of like, you're still hot, you're 35. But next thing you know, you're 40 and you're Laura. And the guys that pursued you before, they're like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I'll take new Laura, who's 10 years younger, because guys are visual, whereas women aren't as visual creatures. So I'll always tell that story about my friend. By the way, her real name is Laura, because I don't want to put her shit out there like that. And I always remembered, like, okay, 40-year-old Adam, pimp, stud, doing his thing. 40-year-old Laura, wah-wah, sad story. And I feel bad, because Laura's awesome. But Laura, you know, probably should have doubled down on a dude who was in love with her 10 years prior, but she was like, "Ah, I'll do better." And then that Prince Charming never came around.
Yeah, it breaks my heart.
Yeah, I see it in your face. You're like, no.
It hurts me. It breaks my heart.
Why? Became a dead flower.
Good, stop.
Is that what happened?
It does. It breaks
my
heart.
Let me ask you a question.
I mean, careful, how much more time do we have here? Careful with your questions.
Do you think...
That's how much time I have. We have like 10 minutes.
Okay. Do you think, genuine question, that you'll ever meet a man you love as much as you love Bitcoin?
I bloody well hope so, yeah. That's like man before Bitcoin, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, how do I come across? Do I come across as like this hard...
Yeah.
Leia, can you clarify what you want in a man?
Speak yes. To like, I like, for me, like...
Clarify. Like I want to be a wife. Why? Like, I don't understand why everyone's so surprised
what
every time
mean?
I say that.
I'm not surprised. I'm just, I feel like you love Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I don't think like...
Bitcoin's not giving me children and it's not like being... It's not holding me at night, is it? No.
Maybe it is.
I hodl my Bitcoin. I need something to hodl me.
Maybe your BitMEX account. Maybe you're just like...
Oh, that's so weird, Adam. That's so not cool. No way.
So you think that you could put a man before Bitcoin?
I know I could put a man before Bitcoin. Oh, for sure. I put a man before a lot of things, yeah. Mm. I just, unfortunately, I haven't met anyone that I'm in love with. Like, I've loved, but I haven't, like, been like, wow, like, you are somebody that I want to give my future to. I think love is giving your future to someone, and I haven't met anyone that I want to give my future to. Mm-hmm. And that, I have been in relationships, and I broke them off because I'm like, you're not the one that I want to marry, and I don't want to waste time. And I'm looking for the one that I want to marry, 100%.
Yeah, I think I say this all the time. Men, you should waste your 20s as much as possible.
Agreed.
Waste your 20s. Like, I wasted my 20s, zero regrets. Women can waste their early 20s.
Yeah.
Do not waste your mid-20s. Because if you waste your mid-20s, you're going to wake up one day and you're going to be 30. And you're going to be like the Kim Kardashian story. And you're just going to marry the first guy that tells you he loves you. And that's not going to work out well. So... Men and women are different, but I appreciate women beyond. But like they need to understand like the future. Like you said so eloquently, like I put my future. How did you describe that?
Love is giving someone else your future.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I just haven't met anyone that I want to give my future to yet. Mm-hmm. You know, and it means giving up many different things, we don't need to get into.
What do you mean? Get into it.
I'd rather not
up?
On my
what
podcast.
Do you have to give up?
We're not talking about that on my podcast. We can talk about that another time. It's my
Leia
podcast.
Halpern, this podcast, from what I understand, is where the conversations that nobody wants to have other places takes place.
We can have them on the Suscast podcast, okay? I'll come on your podcast. I'll come back into the studio and we'll have that conversation.
We won't talk Bitcoin. We'll have this awkward conversation.
We'll have this awkward conversation.
And what is the point of contention here right now?
Pardon?
Like the point of contention that you won't answer what?
The setting that I'm in, and we can speak about that off air. Okay. All right. I think I'm going to end it there. Adam, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah. I really appreciate your insight on finance. You had a lot to say. I love this conversation. I love everything you've done. And major congrats on moving and shifting and everything that you're building.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on. Guys, please follow Adam, Soscast podcast, Valuetainment. They're doing amazing on YouTube. Anywhere else.
Can I give a plug?
Please, go.
Follow us on Valuetainment. And then my channel is called Valuetainment Money. And we've got a lot of exciting things that are coming up right now. Some new talent that we're signing. An A-list Hollywood actor is now coming to Valuetainment. One of the ladies, Jedediah Bila, she just left. Well, she was on The View. She's now on Valuetainment. And we've got a bunch of surprises that are coming up. We're doing a major event in South Florida, you know, X amount of 100,000 miles that way. and we're going to have Robert Kiyosaki there and a bunch of Chaz Palminteri, a bunch of Kevin Connolly, amazing things. And so follow us on Valuetainment, and you can follow my personal channel on Sauce Talks Money on Instagram. And by the way, just free plug for you, for me, for everyone. There's a lot of fake accounts out there. For mine, I've gotten hit up by multiple Leia Halperns. Don't give anybody crypto because they DM'd you. Yeah. Anybody. That's my problem with the crypto these days. Like, there's a lot of scammers out there, but that's a whole nother topic. Don't send anybody money just because they DM you.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that, actually, because a very good friend of mine just got scammed out of $400 because they thought it was me. So that's problematic. But Adam, thank you so much. And guys, thank you so much for watching. I hope you found this valuable. And also don't forget, if you do want to buy the dip right now, then BitMEX is the place to go. A huge thank you to BitMEX, because without them, we wouldn't be able to bring you such important content. And while you're here, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button and the like button. And we'll see you all next week. The Leah Heilpan Show.